This is United States v. Duty. Mr. Stephens?
This case was tried as a non-jury trial on stipulated facts, so I believe the appropriate standard of review should be de novo review. The judge made findings of fact, or made conclusions of law, rather, based on the stipulated facts. The facts that were stipulated to were very simple. The defendant, Mr. Duty, was arrested for drug trafficking offense, and when he was interviewed, he was asked if he had previously been involved in any other offenses, and he told them that some months previously he had received a firearm as collateral for a drug trafficking or a drug deal, and held that gun for 5 or 6 days until the person paid him the $60. This raises the question:
Why didn't? But he didn't. He returned the gun, but not the ammunition.
We don't know that that was the same ammunition, and in fact, we don't know that that individual even gave him any ammunition. There was a period of many months that separated the two events, and there's nothing in the record that indicates that that was the ammunition for that gun, that there was any ammunition when he received that gun, or that the individual had given him ammunition.
I thought he hadn't returned everything he'd gotten from this fellow, from his customer.
Record, I think, only discloses that when he was arrested several months later, he was found in possession of ammunition and clip that would fit a firearm of that make or nature. I think clearly the record itself indicates or shows that he received a firearm, but nothing beyond that. And rather than go through the record at this point and take some time, I'll reserve that for rebuttal so that I can address that if necessary. But the question that's raised by this appeal is receipt of a firearm in collateral for a drug deal, a possession in furtherance of that drug deal. And I think that the case law, as the Supreme Court has established it, says that it is not. I tracked the history of the Supreme Court's cases of Smith, Bailey, and Watson and their interpretation of the term use, because I think it's helpful to see the reasoning and rationale of the Supreme Court and Congress's reaction to that. Smith very simply said use should be given its plain meaning. A word in a statute should be given its plain meaning, and a person who buys a firearm or buys drugs with a firearm is guilty of use of that firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking offense. He used it as payment. Smith came along, and in Smith, the individual was not in either actual possession. He wasn't carrying the firearm, and he didn't physically use the firearm, but he had the firearm in the trunk of a car, obviously there to be available in case anything went wrong or in case he had to go back in and take any kind of action. And the D.C. Circuit said there's a proximity test and an access test. And the Supreme Court says, no, that's not correct. We need to refine the word use, and the word use needs to be construed to mean something more than mere possession, but needs to be something that's actively employed. Congress reacted to that, and they clearly, when they enacted the amendment to the statute, intended to close the door on the loophole, because what Smith and Bailey told us is, if somebody goes into a drug deal and there's a firearm sitting on the table across the room, it's not being carried, it's not being actively employed, but it's there for protection. And a drug dealer has the opportunity to use that firearm. So we need to close that loophole. Is there possession, constructive or active, by that drug dealer of that firearm? And I think that's what Congress was trying to address, because that was the hole that Bailey left. Now, Congress clearly understands the difference between receipt and possession, because 922G prohibits both possession and receipt of a firearm. They know that there's a distinction between an ongoing possession of a firearm and simply a receipt of a firearm. So Congress has the ability and the opportunity and the understanding to be able to distinguish between possession and receipt, and could have said in this statute, anyone who possesses or receives a firearm in furtherance of a drug trafficking offense commits an offense. And in that case, I'd be out of luck.
It's the literal language, though, doesn't it? I mean, the crime was his sale of the drugs, and in furtherance of the crime, he obtained the firearm. He possesses the firearm because it's the collateral for the sale. So,
well, and I think that gets us back to the difference between Smith and Bailey, because in Smith, the Supreme Court said, let's look at the plain meaning of the word, and in Bailey, they said, we need to look at it in terms of the language of the statute. And in fact, the Fifth Circuit did that in Sabalas-Torres, and although I think they came to the wrong conclusion, I think their analysis was correct. They talked about what the term possession means, and they talked, for instance, that
ambiguity about possession. Your client possessed the gun during the for the 6 days before he returned. He possessed it, and it was in furtherance of the drug sale, in the sense that, you know, He needed collateral because the customer didn't have cash. He gives him a gun. I don't know. Seems that's the most straightforward reading. Now,
well, this court heard argument earlier involving a number of UCC issues, and obviously drug dealers don't subscribe to the uniform commercial code, and we're not dealing with specific contract law or such, but the reality is purchaser got the drugs from Mr. Duty, gave him collateral in return. Those drugs were his at that point. The drug crime was complete. He could go off, he could smoke the drugs, he could sell the drugs, he could throw them away, he could turn them over to law enforcement.
That's irrelevant. Look, with no gun, no deal, right? No drug deal if there's no gun, because apparently this is only collateral.
Well, we do know that the drugs were given in exchange for collateral. Whether there would have been another deal, we don't know.
Okay, but the point is the drug figured in the transaction. It's not like having a gun in your attic while you're selling drugs. The gun figured in the transaction. It was part of the transaction.
And I think that when we look at the way the Supreme Court has analyzed the word use, we find a difference.
We're not talking about use. We're talking about possession.
The word possession can be certainly construed to include both active or actual and constructive possession. But
this is actual possession, of course.
The Fifth Circuit wrestled with this question.
Look,
and
this is actual possession. You possess the collateral, right? If you're a pawnbroker, you possess the pawns. You don't own them. You have a security interest, but you have actual possession.
And I think this is where the Fifth Circuit in Sabalas-Torres had some difficulty, because they were not able to distinguish between the second part of the statute and the carry, because they were unable to conclude anything where possession would be different than carry.
He's not carrying the gun. He's possessing the gun. It's his collateral.
And the Fifth Circuit said that the two are functionally the same.
But it's possession. It's not carriage. It's not use. It's possession.
And therefore, possession must be different than carry, or it wouldn't be in the statute.
It is different. You possess things that you don't carry on your person, for goodness sake. You possess your automobile. You don't carry it.
I would like to reserve my last few minutes for a rebuttal.
An automobile has no wheels, so you don't use it, you don't carry it. You possess it, right? You possess it. That's not arguable, is it?
I think it is, Judge.
Now, well, wait a second. You're saying if you have a car that you don't use and you don't carry, you don't possess it? You're kidding.
The Fifth Circuit also pointed out that...
what the Fifth Circuit said. Are you telling me that in my case, You do not possess the car because you don't use it and you don't carry it?
Well, the Fifth Circuit said a firearm hanging on the wall is not is possessed.
You answer my question. Do you possess that car or you don't possess that car?
You certainly have constructive possession if it's
no,
in your yard.
No, actual possession of the car, honestly.
At this point, my time is up, so if there are no further questions, I'll relinquish the podium.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Schmidt?
May it please the court, counsel. The real issue in this case is, did the government present a viable theory as to how the firearm furthered the drug trafficking crime here? And here the receipt and the holding, the possession of the firearm as collateral, allowed the drug deal to go forward when it wouldn't have otherwise gone forward.
It seems so remote from any reason why you'd want to enhance punishments for drug dealers who possess guns, right? I mean, presumably the purpose is it's dangerous. But if he's just holding his collateral, for all we know, he has his own guns, which he prefers, or, you know, it's just arbitrary choice of collateral by the customer, and he could have given him something else. So it just seems really remote from what they're worried about.
I think Congress's enactment of the 924C statute and the subsequent amendment after the Bailey decision in 1995 shows, I think, at least that Congress was concerned that drug trafficking that involves firearms is more dangerous and a greater problem for society than drug trafficking that doesn't involve firearms at all. And here this court has said in prior...
I don't get it. How does that apply to a case like this? What enhances the danger, the fact that the gun is the collateral?
I think introducing firearms into the drug trafficking environment, which enables their use either by persons who are using cocaine, distributing cocaine, makes for a more dangerous situation. And I think that's what Congress was concerned about by adding this enhanced penalty, this mandatory consecutive penalty. And the real question is, does this fit within the literal language of the statute? As this court said in United States versus Duran and more recently in United States versus Vaughn, where possession in furtherance is charged, not use here, as Your Honor has pointed out, the weapon has to further, advance, move forward, promote, or facilitate the drug trafficking crime. And here, this particular 9mm firearm certainly did that. I think the court in Frederick said it best. As a matter of logic, the defendant's willingness to accept possession of a gun as consideration for some of the drugs he wishes to sell does promote or facilitate that illegal sale. If the defendant did not accept...
Promoted apart from any other collateral. What distinguishes his promotion because it's a gun? Is it because he's temporarily arming the seller for future sales to whoever for at least that short period of time?
No, Your Honor, I think for purposes of satisfying the essential elements of the crime, the only real question here was, did this possession of the firearm, the initial receipt, initial possession, promote and advance this drug trafficking crime, which was the sale of cocaine? And I think the answer to that is obviously yes. And a number
of... How is it promoted apart from $100 bills? What's the difference? What's the promotion that distinguishes it because it's a gun?
I don't think so. I think it could have been as well as something else, but the fact that the gun was collateral puts it square within the statute.
Congress has specifically said a particular collateral is because it injects this firearm into the stream of drug commerce is what we should focus on?
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's... I'm speculating a little bit as to what Congress was intending, but it seems that the introduction of firearms into the drug trafficking trade was seen by Congress as a more dangerous and perilous situation for society, necessitating this extra statute. Here, the district court said that if Mr. Duty did not take possession of the 9mm firearm, it couldn't have served as collateral, and if there was no collateral, then there would have been no cocaine sale. And the other courts that have considered the receipt of firearms as collateral in drug trafficking transactions have said precisely that, that these guns promote and facilitate and advance the sale. In fact, there is really three phases here. There was Mr. Duty's initial receipt and possession of the firearm at the time that he handed the cocaine over. Then there was his continued possession during the 4 to 5 day period in which the gun served as collateral. All right. And then there was the time where the cocaine purchaser actually came up with the cash for the deal and they met again. And then Mr. Duty again possessed the firearm and then returned the firearm and took in its place the $60 cash. So there were really three phases to it. And each of the three phases, in a way, promoted, facilitated, and advanced the drug trafficking sale, that is, the sale of the cocaine. And without that collateral, because the purchaser didn't have the cash initially, the deal wouldn't have gone forward. So we believe that the government did present a viable theory. The district court did correctly hold that this was a 924C violation, and we'd ask the court to affirm the judgment of conviction on the 924C count.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you.
Mr. Stevens, do you have anything further?
My time is up, but I would only add that following Watson, the Supreme Court left open the question of whether case could have been brought under possession. Congress certainly could have at that time amended the statute to say possess and receive if they were concerned about injecting the firearm into the stream of commerce. So I would disagree with Mr. Schmidt that Congress did in fact intend that. If there are no further questions, that would conclude my presentation.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Stevens.
You.
And you were appointed, were you not?
Yes.
Well, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the